Cabernet tends to be the sort of Errol Flynn of the grape varieties.
The most expensive beer in history.
People will turn around to me and say, oh, I'm just making gin while I wait for my whiskey to get ready.
Because wine is an adventure.
Conventional winemakers who just condemn all natural wine as faulty.
The prestigious title of Sake Samurai.
Looking at whiskey in more of an artful culinary way.
They kind of look at it as a novelty more than anything. The guy from the rock bands is making wine.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine, and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. Bass and Flinders Distillery was founded in 2009 on the Mornington Peninsula in Victoria with a desire to make high-quality gins, brandies, and liqueurs. But it's brandy that you'll be hearing the most about today as we introduce you to head distiller Holly Clintworth. Brandy has an incredibly rich history in Australia, but it has a little bit of an image problem, which, funnily enough, is fairly similar to what gin was confronting little more than a decade ago. In this episode, Holly tells us why her family chose a path that is currently less travelled in Australian distilling and why you should be reconsidering brandy as part of your spirits repertoire. But first, she'll tell you a little bit more about her background and how she came to succeed her father, Wayne, in the family business. And that's coming up right after this.
My father was one of the founders of Bass and Flinders back in 2009. And when it was set up, it was originally really set up as a bit of a passion project a challenge. We wanted to basically do something different on the Mornington Peninsula. And given, obviously, the Mornington Peninsula is a wine-growing region, we really took inspiration from the region. No one else was using wine to make spirits on the peninsula at the time. And so we really wanted to add value to the local region and turn wine into spirit. And, you know, this is something that happens a lot in Europe. But at the time, there was no other distilleries on the peninsula doing this. I stepped into the business full time in 2016. And prior to that, I'd studied business and was working in the wine industry and marketing. My journey into the wine industry started around the same time Bass and Flinders was founded over 10 years ago now. So Dad and I were kind of working in parallel industries right from the get-go. I'd help him out here and there with some bottling and some labelling or some lemon zesting for the limoncello. And I could really see how much passion he had for the business, and I guess that passion was pretty infectious over the years for me. So, yeah, in 2016, I kind of made the decision to step in and help Dad full time, and I saw it as an opportunity to use my own experiences to help grow our family business. So I've since taken over running of the business as a second-generation distiller. And not coming from a science background, I pretty much learnt everything I know about brandy and production and distillation today from my dad. And I really had to pick things up pretty quickly. He really encouraged me to kind of to explore my passion for brandy. And I kind of have visited Cognac on a couple of occasions too to really immerse myself in brandy in particular. And that city is just fantastic for inspiration. You know, it's like it's an entire town that's economy and gastronomy and culture is built around brandy. It's like a mecca for me. So after visiting Cognac a couple of times, that really piqued my interest in brandy and production. And it's kind of an ongoing learning process for me.
What about for your dad? Like, what, you know, where did his inspiration to do brandy come from? Because obviously, you know, in terms of brown spirits, whiskey has been where the real groundswell's been in Australia over the last couple of decades.
It's definitely a little bit more of a challenge, knowing that whiskeys definitely seem to be a little bit cooler these days than brandy, I think. But yeah, the original inspiration for delving into the world of brandy was really a love of classic brandies produced in France. So he was really inspired, and we were really inspired by, you know, the likes of Cognac and Armagnac and Calvados and the really rich tradition behind these products in particular. Obviously, again, taking inspiration from the region that we're located in as well. But we really wanted to draw on that rich tradition of brandy production, particularly from France, but also at the same time make something really unique to Australia. And we do that by using kind of old world tradition. So we use the kind of Cognacais distillation methods, but we use uniquely Australian ingredients and flavours. So the brandy that we make is all 100% Victorian Chardonnay, which I feel is a really quintessentially Australian white grape variety. And then we mature our eau de vie grape spirit in ex-cognac barrels that we've had resized down to 114 litres specifically for our use. So what we do is really, really unique, and it's kind of this beautiful merging of old world with new.
And how's that gone, just as we kind of just mentioned, brandy, it's been a little bit out of the limelight in recent years, but it's got such a rich history in Australia. When people are coming into the cellar door, and you know, when you've kind of gone to market with brandy over the last 11 or 12 years, what's the response been like?
Yeah, look, like you said before, you know, whiskey's definitely hot right now in Australia and around the world. But I think we're definitely seeing a bit of a move, a bit of a trend towards brandy as well, more specifically in the last few years. You know, I think Australia's developed a reputation for its dark spirits, not only locally but internationally, and this kind of positive publicity across whiskey and rum locally and abroad, I think that then spreads to brandy, and that gives people at home a lot of confidence to kind of branch out into locally produced dark spirits, including brandy, in a way that we haven't really seen in the past. So I think that kind of broader growing reputation of the Australian craft spirits industry is really helping pique people's interest in brandy as well. Given brandy had a bit of a fashion crisis in Australia in kind of the 1960s and 70s, you know, it used to be thought of as a bit more of a drink for your grandma or something like that. But, you know, today there's also this younger, more discerning drinker who's really interested in quality and craft and kind of very curious about the story behind the spirit. And, yeah, we definitely see that with our brandy as well, more and more.
Now, looking at your brandy specifically, you know, you mentioned before it's 100% Victorian Chardonnay. How important is the grape variety in brandy production?
Yeah, look, really important for us. So, yeah, we chose Chardonnay again as a really quintessentially Australian white grape variety. So something quite unique as opposed to the slightly blander grape varieties they might use in cognac. We work really closely with our winemaker on the specs. So really important to get the acidity levels, the sugar, the ripeness, all per our specifications. And we used Victorian wine. We get a small amount from the Mornington Peninsula, but the Mornington Peninsula Chardonnay is extremely expensive. It's kind of the top tier as far as quality goes. And when it comes to distillation, you know, you don't necessarily want to distill a Penfolds Grange because it's a waste of good Penfolds Grange. So we kind of go that mid-tier Chardonnay. And, you know, if you went the lower quality Chardonnay, you'd really start to get some of those nastier components kind of being amplified in the distillation process. The Chardonnay grape variety for us is really important because we just are choosing to work with one white grape variety, and also the quality is really important to us too.
With production of cognac, I think blending is really important. You tend to see a lot of cognac houses, you know, having a lot of different eau de vies, as they call them, and then blending them together. Is there an element of blending that goes into making your brandies, or do they tend to be single cask propositions?
Yeah, there is an element of blending. The only single cask brandy that we've done, we released last year, that was our distiller's selection single cask brandy, and that won a couple of trophies and a gold medal, which we were really proud of. But our Ochre, our flagship brandy, that's a blend. And yeah, blending is really important to maintain consistency of style and flavor profile. And it's all about kind of melding the aromas and flavors and finding that kind of harmonious whole. It's almost like painting a picture. And we don't add any caramel to our brandies. It's all a completely natural process. But yeah, the blending is a really important part, and it's all done with the nose. And each flavor compound and aromatic compound in the brandy can actually be traced to various stages in the brandy production process, which is really interesting. So you've got your primary aromas, which are the aromatic compounds that come from the grapes. And then you've got your secondary aromas, which are the aromatic compounds that come from the fermentation of the sugar, the aldehydes, the alcohols, the esters. And then you've got your tertiary aromas, which are the compounds that come from maturation in oak barrels. So, the blending and working with all of those aromatic compounds to get that perfect balance is very important. We're distilling on a 300-litre pot still, which is absolutely tiny compared to cognac. You know, the average size in cognac's 1,000 to 2,500 litres. So kind of the smaller the batch, the more control you've got. But that being said, we're doing the same double distillation. The first distillation usually results in a spirit that's between 28 to 32% alcohol, and then that second distillation resulting in our hearts or our eau de vie, that's an average of about 70% alcohol. We distill on lees to add a bit of extra creaminess, and that proportion of lees is always fairly similar year to year. There's a few different ways that the distiller can kind of affect the end spirit, and the first one's the distillation of lees, and the second one is the recycling of the tails. We do that in our second distillation, and also kind of adjusting the temperature. But we use that same process year on year, and the variants are going to be the vintage and every single barrel that varies slightly.
Is there a set number of years that you're tending to lay the brandies down for, or are you kind of consistently keeping away some older stocks, or how do you sort of decide when it's ready to release?
Yeah, that's a hard one. But when we first released Ochre, our flagship brandy, we decided to wait 5 years before we got our first bottle on shelf. I mean, in Australia, the legal requirement is a minimum of 2 years aging, but we really wanted to start with a premium product from the get-go. So we do tend to wait a little longer than is required. But I do have, you know, our first commercial distillation of eau de vie to create brandy was in 2011. So I've got brandy as old as dating back to 2011 to work with. Our current batch of Ochre is a blend of 5, 7, and 8 year old brandies, and it's on the bottle, it just says minimum of 5 years. So that just gives me a bit of scope to really choose which aged brandies to blend to keep that consistency.
How many other distilleries out there do you know of that are making brandy in Australia now? Like, obviously, I think in the last 12 months we've heard quite a bit about distilleries that have that have done a run of brandy, maybe with some smoke tainted grapes that they were able to get hold of, or whatever. But then, other than that, I mean, there's sort of obviously Angove is the best known. Sullivan's Cove's released some brandies of late. Is there much more of a movement that you're aware of?
It's a fairly small industry, and the distillers often catch up at the gin events that we're all regularly at each year. And
I thought you were going to say there was like a special brandy distillers convention or something like that.
That'd be wonderful.
I was like, that'd be, that, I mean, that's what we need,
that
isn't
is
it?
What like we a, need.
brandy forum.
And I feel like there used to be back in the day when brandy was a huge thing, but not anymore. Yeah, no, that's a great idea. I need to start keeping track because I do talk to other distillers and they do mention in passing that they're putting eau de vie down to create brandy. And I've heard of multiple distilleries doing so, and I'm sure that in South Australia in particular, there's going to be more and more. I feel, based on kind of ad hoc discussions I've had with other distillers, I feel like probably in another maybe 2 to 3 years, there's going to be a real influx of brandy onto the market once it comes to maturation.
And that's probably a good thing for you, right? Because you know, you really need more distilleries making a bit of noise about brandy just so that it gets it into more people's hands to try it.
Yeah, absolutely. The Australian brandy industry is so small at the moment. So I think anyone and everyone willing to kind of put some good quality brandy out there, that's a good thing for the industry.
And tell me about like the current range. You mentioned the Ochre, and there looks like there's a couple of other brandies that you've got available at the moment.
Yeah, so we have our flagship Ochre. That is 100% Chardonnay, and that is a blend of 5, 7 and 8 year old brandies. We've got the Distiller's Selection that we released last year, just from a single barrel. So there's not a whole lot of that one. And yeah, as I mentioned, really, really proud to win some awards for that one. And then the other brandy that we released, it was late 2019 now that we released this one. It was, it's called the Anniversary Cuvée, very, very unique, that one. So it's actually a blend of our Chardonnay brandy and cognac, French cognac. And I created this product because, well, on one of my trips to Cognac, I made friends with a master blender, Edouard from Normand and Mercier, and there was a lot of synergies between our two businesses. You know, both family run, both distilling wine on lees, both only working with the natural elements, no additions of caramel or anything like that, and. I created the Anniversary Cuvée as really kind of an ode to our ethos around producing brandy, which is old world tradition with new world flavors like the Chardonnay. So, yeah, really, really unique blend of Australian brandy and French cognac. We chose a 2014 Petit Champagne cognac, and that was very pretty and very floral, and it kind of created this unique accent as opposed to our classic Chardonnay brandy, which is a bit more bold and a bit more rich and full. And it actually created this really beautiful kind of harmony, and it got us somewhere in between this beautiful floral brandy as well as those richer, fruitier notes from the Chardonnay.
How do you suggest people consume them? I mean, they're obviously pretty premium products, your brandy, so I don't think they're going to find their way into cocktails too much.
Yeah. an expensive cocktail. Look, you know, I love sipping brandy neat. I feel like that's how you can best discover, you know, the character of it, the story behind it, the aromas, the palate, the weight, the finish. And just slightly warmed in your hand to kind of open up the aromas a little bit. But I've got no problem with people adding, you know, something I discovered when I went to Cognac was that they drink their brandy or their cognac with tonic or ginger ale. And I think that the French are doing a really great job to kind of revive perceptions of cognac because, you know, younger drinkers used to think of it as something that you sit by a fire smoking your cigar, and people aren't always comfortable getting a bit more creative and adding mixes to it. So I think adding tonic is completely fine, even for a more expensive brandy, just to open it up and to turn it into a longer drink.
What about from a gin perspective, you have quite a few different gins there, I recall from having attended a tasting a couple of years ago. What are you working on at the moment that's exciting from a gin perspective?
Yeah, so from a gin perspective, and I guess this is what makes our distillery really unique, is that we've carried over those distillation methods, those production methods, that Charentaise double distillation method in producing that eau de vie. We've carried that eau de vie over into our gins. So we've got our single vineyard gin range, which is made from 100% a Shiraz-based eau de vie using the same brandy production techniques. And in working with those gins, it's really interesting because, again, we're sourcing Shiraz from a single vineyard. Every vintage of Shiraz is different. So every eau de vie base spirit that's only distilled up to, you know, about 75% alcohol, it's got so much more flavor and texture and viscosity than a neutral grape spirit. And we use that eau de vie Shiraz base spirit as almost an additional botanical unto itself that you don't find in gins, for instance, that will buy in that kind of more commercial grade alcohol that's distilled right up to 95%. It doesn't have that added element. So I think that's probably the most unique thing about our gins and that link back to us as actually being a brandy producer.
You've got a column still there, don't you?
We do. We do. That is our new gin still. So we've got a 300-litre pot still that we continue to distill all of our wine on, the Chardonnay and the Shiraz. And then for the gins, we take that Shiraz eau de vie over to, it's a hybrid pot with column, and we do the third distillation, the vapour infusion on that still.
But you're not taking it up above 90.
No, like, no.
A lot of neutral grain or grape spirit would be when gin distillers buy it in, or in rare cases in Australia, make it themselves.
No, we won't do that, because that really detracts from, I guess, the whole point of making that ourselves and for actually, you know, paying the premium to buy in the wine and distill it. There's no point in paying a premium for Shiraz wine if you're just going to strip all of the flavors and texture and viscosity right out of it. So we do that traditional Charentaise distillation method in the pot still to retain that character. And so, no, we wouldn't be distilling that up. We'd only be using that gin still is fairly new, and that's really just for that third distillation for vapour infusing the gin. It's more just to be able to produce slightly larger batches, really. So the plan is not to change the recipe at all. But that being said, our single vineyard gins every year, the other really unique thing about working with an eau de vie, a Shiraz eau de vie that changes every year, is that you actually have to adjust your gin recipe every year to counteract the changes in the eau de vie. So that gets really complicated for us every year, because obviously with brandy, you know, it's all about the nuances of where those grapes have come from and the distillation year on year. But with gin, people are very much looking for a consistent product. And so given that eau de vie, that Shiraz eau de vie is not consistent, we're constantly adjusting the recipe slightly for a consistent end result. But ultimately, we don't want to change the end result at all.
What about from a liqueur point of view? Have you got anything you're experimenting with there? Or is it really the brandy and the gin are the main focus for you?
Yeah, I created a new product last year called Madame Marmalade. It's a brandy-based orange liqueur, kind of released to take on, you know, the best of the French brandy-based orange liqueurs. I definitely want to explore liqueurs a lot more. I think there's a lot more we could do there. And something that we've done as very small batches in the past is our Mistel. It's a very traditional French aperitif, a Pinot de Charente, which is grape juice fortified with brandy. So, yeah, there's definitely things there, and we'll be doing another batch of that probably in the next year or so, the Mistel. And the other thing that I started playing around with last year, we did a spiced Christmas brandy. So I released that just before Christmas last year, and that was really popular. That was inspired by my grandmother's Christmas pudding recipe, and I literally took the ingredients from her recipe and I steeped them in the brandy, and the brandy tastes like Christmas pudding. So very popular. And we've also, off the back of that, just started doing spiced brandy masterclasses as well. So people can come in and actually blend their own bottle of spiced brandy. And I think getting creative with those brandy-based products is also a really important way of, you know, piquing people's interest when it comes to brandy. Brandy doesn't just have to be something in a tulip glass. It can be, you know, it can be the base for a whole host of beautiful spirits and liqueurs.
Now, obviously, you would have had a pretty rough 2020, like a lot of people, with the cellar door no doubt being closed for much of the year. Have things started picking up again, and can people come and visit you?
Yeah, people can come and visit us. Definitely. The Mornington Peninsula was, it seemed like it was the place to be over the summer. So we were very lucky and very grateful that a lot of people chose to leave the city and head down to the peninsula for a breath of fresh air. And we're still open. We're still doing cocktails and masterclasses and tastings.
I look forward to getting down there myself one of these days. And thanks so much for joining us on the Drinks Adventures podcast for a chat.
Thank you, James. Thanks very much.
The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson. Like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.